Yeah, it's on. Okay. Yeah, okay. So as I started without the mic earlier, last time we were discussing these two posters and their efficiency for recruiting to colleges and universities. And what I forgot to mention was that we also tried to determine rhetoric tools they used in order to make an argument. Thank you. What we landed on the last time was the first one, the biggest picture there, using pathos in order to trying to make learning seem fun and the whole experience of a university and college seem fun, and the smaller one using ethos in order to project this as something serious and something authoritative. Yeah, that's what I remember.
Okay, you can't hear me now. Is it because it's put on backward? It works sometimes and not the others. Now it's working? Is it working? Now it's working? Is it working now? Good, thank you. Now, there were certain words used, and I want to improve the way you use words and make it more. And one of the words you used was efficient. So which one was more efficient? And when you're talking about efficiency, you have to talk about a metrics. So the metrics is rhetorically efficient. Right? And then we're measuring in terms of ethos, pathos, and logos. Now the efficiency has to do with what is our target group? Right? So one of the things we talked about in this slide is that if I'm having if I'm making an argument to convince someone to come to Higg, should I argue with pathos first, then ethos, and then logos? Or should I argue with ethos, pathos, and logos? Because one of the things that people mix up when they looking at the concept of rhetoric is it's very difficult to divide those things up. People make decisions based on all three at the same time, and you never know which one is prominent. So it's not to say that this girl here on the left will always make decisions based on feelings. You have to understand you're appealing to the three arguments and the ordering of the arguments that's important. And why is this important for the security field? The reason I'm showing this diagram is this has a lot to do with the security market. It appears that the security market, from my experience, and I have some evidence of this when I worked in business, in terms of pricing models. I can't show you that evidence because it's company secrets. I would love to do research on this. But basically what this is saying, if here you have the motivation, skills, knowledge, and general competence in security. And what you see in the security market, there are some people like the military, etc., that are very competent and motivated in security. But in reality, the large part of the market is not. So when you're going out trying to sell security, you have to decide if you're selling security to these people or to these people. And there's always a tendency for people to sell to the middle. Let's say they're selling to this group of people, which is not good. Because you piss off these guys because it's not enough security, and you piss off these people because it's too much security. Right? So this is the reason I chose this as a pedagogical tool, and what this course is about is not so much rhetoric, it's the rhetoric of IT security. Espen won the Pizza and Panic Award, and we had this at last week, where you had to tell a cybersecurity ghost story. This is, I will be telling you a cybersecurity ghost story. There was strengths and weaknesses, what everybody does. Does anybody here have a ghost story they want to tell? Did you do your homework? So that means we're going to have to use it for something else. Now, did you do the other piece of homework where you have to present yourself with slides? It was on the first lecture task. You didn't do it. No, you're supposed to present yourself, why, what you're studying, and explain information security to someone. Good, fine. This is a classroom exercise, so don't worry about it. Annika, you decided not to present. That's fine. We're going to have to figure out how to get into that. This article, now, I want you to read this article. And I will sum it up a bit. But the idea is that when I give you these types of articles with the reference, I want you to read them, understand, right? And it's not so much... if you don't read it, fine. I will, as most professors do, I'll explain what the article's about, then you won't read it, so I never know what I'm supposed to do now. But it's a short article, so it shouldn't take that long, but he's talking about the field. So these are professionals in the field who are dealing with this problem of fear, uncertainty, and doubt in the business. And at the same time, they're trying to sell their own knowledge. And this has to do with the concept, and we will get through this concept again in the many times in the course. That says attraction, for those that can't read. It's not very good here. So right now I've gotten your attraction because I'm using the buzzword. I want to get your interest, and I want to give you a decision why you should read this and take an action why you should read this. It's short. But what they're doing here, as you see in the slide, in the slide, is they're trying to use this attraction to sell their own knowledge about cybersecurity. So you can go on the right and click this way, and a guide to cybersecurity risk management. Buy my book, and your life will be better. This is part of the game. Right? Now, what is good FUD? What is bad FUD? Bad fear, uncertainty, and doubt in a business is when you scare somebody and consider it's hopeless. And then the other one is if you get too much attraction and interest, but then you don't give any decision or action for the person to take. So this turns into hype. And there's many people in this business that make their money on just hype. As a security consultant or security manager, you can maybe survive 1 to 2 years on hype. And then I guess if you want to keep in your job, you're going to go to another job and hype it there. But sometimes it's worth it because you get more money that way. But it's so hype in security is bad because it often doesn't bring about structural changes. So good rhetorics is not just about hype. What fear, uncertainty, and doubt is good is that you get attention, so you need it to attract attention. And then you have to apply what's written here, and I wrote it on the board, this AIDA concept, which is attraction, interest, decision, and action. Now, if you want, you can jump to this link later on. Sorry about the language in this. You saw this before.
Bitching about that sale you shot. Some son of a bitch don't want to buy land. Somebody don't want what you're selling. Some broad you're trying to screw, so forth. Let's talk about something important. Are they all here?
All but one.
Well, I'm going anyway. Let's talk about something important.
But this is a...
Put that coffee down.
Have you guys seen this porno? So, okay. So this is a video that's about basically high-pressure shale and how you sell financial services. So these guys make their money by selling financial services. So they go out, and have you guys invested in your pension today? Have you? Does anybody here have investment in pension? Did anybody see the debate last Monday on TV about the immigrants, the refugees? Now, I'm going to go hop to Norwegian for those. I think everybody in the course is Norwegian. So the debate on the news was between Velferdsordning versus Godhetstyranni. Does the word Godhetstyranni mean anything to you? Anybody? What do you think of that word in Norwegian? Godhetstyranni. Well, Google it now. It will affect the Velferdsordning. Right? And basically what you had a representative of a political party here debating with the Norwegian church is if we should take in more refugees or not, and why we shouldn't take in more refugees. And they used the term that the church had Godhetstyranni. You can think about that for them. So, but this, and the reason I'm bringing this up in terms of language now, the language you use is pretty harsh. And here, this is what you use. Often, many people use this when they're in sales. To anybody who wants to sell refrigerators and insurance. Did the word come up okay? You do? And did it have Velferdsordning in it? No. But anyways, so I'm saying when you're taking this course, and I'm hoping you're doing this, look at all these words they're using. Right? That's your job, and I want to hopefully you get, but unfortunately it's in Norwegian, but you have to start looking at language. So unfortunately this language is a bit harsh for you.
Coffee's for closers only.
Okay, closers in English means signing on the dotted line, right?
You think I'm fucking with you? I am not fucking with you. I'm here from downtown. I'm here from Mitch and Murray.
I'm here from downtown. He's using ethos.
And I'm here on a mission of mercy.
Pathos.
Your name's Levine. Yeah. You call yourself a salesman, you son of a bitch? I don't gotta listen to this shit.
You certainly don't, pal. Because the good news is, you're fired.
The bad news is you've got all you've got just 1 week to regain your job, starting with tonight. Starting with tonight's sit. Oh, have I got your attention now?
Have I got your attention now? So he's got his attention using different rhetorical techniques.
Good. Because we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize, a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. You get the picture? You laughing now? You got leads. Mitch and Murray paid good money. Get their names to sell them. You can't close the leads you're given.
Argument. You got leads. These leads were expensive.
You can't close shit. You are shit. Hit the bricks, pal, and beat it, because you are going out.
The leads are weak.
The leads are weak. Fucking leads are weak. You're weak. I've been in this business 15 years.
What's your name?
Fuck you. That's my name. You know why, mister? Because you drove a Hyundai to get here tonight. I drove an $80,000 BMW. That's my name.
Argumentation through cause and effect. I'm rich, therefore I'm a good salesman.
And your name is your wanting. And you can't play in the man's game. You can't close them. Then go home and tell your wife your troubles. Because only one thing counts in this life. Get them to sign on the line which is dotted. You hear me, you fucking faggots? A, B, C. A, always, B, B, C, closing. Always be closing. Always be closing. A, I, D, A. Attention, interest, decision, action. Attention.
Okay, so that's, you have to get through much. You, when you have your time, you can see that. And that was the three terms I'm saying. Now, the word closing is confusing here. But what he wants to say is the closing has to do with you taking some form of action. Now, when you're telling a ghost story, you want to get attention, interest, decision, and action. So a good... So, a good ghost story has to have attraction. And to get attraction, what you have to do is, he's talking about closing, but I'm saying you have to put it into context. So here's a ghost story I told last year. I didn't want to have it ahead of time because I didn't want to affect the learning. So this was a competition last year. And this is the ghost story that I told in the conference. In the year of our Lord, 2014, it's a sunny day here in Jervik. You're sitting in this room, K102, waiting to start your exam for this course. Pause for effect. The name of the course is Social Technical System Modeling and Analysis 1. You have been assigned seat number 13. You open the exam booklet and begin to read the two pages of the exam question before you start writing. Question 1, no problem. Easy, I got it. Question 2, no problem. Question 3, what? In this case, question 5. Mini essay question. The so-called heartbleed bug was a major information security incident that occurred during the time period you were taking the course? Attached is an article that gives some details of the Heartbleed bug. Also attached is an article on social technical analysis of the mad cow disease that occurred in 1986. That was distributed to you before the exam as a study aid and included here just as a support document. Use the social technical model tools discussed in the course. And model the Heartbleed vulnerability. You have 70 minutes to do this. That's the article. That's the explanation you got. And that's the model there on the right. That's the result of the exam. This is the official result. You notice seat 13? Didn't complete the exam. Are you students here prepared to take the final exam in this course on the 10th? Read Satan versus Saints. Okay? Okay, you saw what I did, right? Fear, and I put the fear in context. You're sitting down. I put it in a context because you've all written the exam, right? You've all been in that situation where you're going through the exam. What behavior do I want you to do? I want you to read the material in this course. So I got your attention, interest. What decision are you going to make? I want you to take action. Now, what's interesting from a rhetorical perspective in this one here, you can see how I could have done two things. I could have asked you two questions. Are you prepared for the final exam of rhetorics on the 10th of December? Then I could have asked you another question. Have you read Saints versus Satan? Or I cannot put a question and a question. I put a question and a command. Right. So, was this good, fear, uncertainty, and doubt for this crowd? One, because it was in context. Two, because it got you to put it in the context that you can actually take an action. There's no use having hype. And you can't do anything about it. Everybody makes everything and the sky is falling. I mean, you know, the Heartbleed came out and the world's going to go under. The world's still going, guys. So the next time an open source vulnerability comes up and you run team management and says, we have to do this, the world's coming under. You better realize that you're going to have another one in another year, and then you have to figure out if you're going to be there. Because if you're there again, the manager can say, what? Why didn't you fix it the last time, Kowalski? So that was the exercise here. Now, in this course, with the other students, as you know, I'm giving them 15 to half an hour individual time. So those of you who are not comfortable speaking or whatever, if you want to book a time, that's 7%, with me to have a one-on-one session to practice doing this, just send me an email. Okay? If you can have the black practice session. If you go on the course page, I will put up times where I have office hours between now and the exam. Or you can send an email if those don't work. So we are on lecture 3. What we had last time, unfortunately, not enough students had read the material, so I couldn't go through chapters 1 to 5. And I have about 5 minutes of power. So we start off with chapter 1. Now, I did this before last time. This is a slide I used last time, but I modify a bit. And I was saying, reading this was going to ask you questions too, but I won't. And what I say when I say read slowly, every time you read a statement in this, one, the first thing you say, okay, do I understand this? The answer is yes. Two, can I apply this to the information security problem? And then how can I apply it to the information security problem? Or can I find examples in a newspaper? I go on the web that does the same thing. I want you to go out and look at reality about IT security rhetorics. It's everywhere today. And you can't say to me you can't find anything, because if you just go on cybersecurity problems, you're going to get a million hits. Now, on page 4, the way the book is done, and read it slowly, it's in a sense, it's not that good pedagogically. But it's called the rules of arguments. So what's rule number one? Anybody? Okay. Thank you. Another rule is, when you have a premise, and that's the thing, because the way he writes it, right? So you're going back to the rules where? In the book directly? Right. So this rule here says that you should, on page 4, start from a reliable premise. What rule is that? Yes, I get lost there because he doesn't say it specifically. I thought it was rule 2, but it's confusing in the book. Yeah. So when I say rules, I don't care what rule 1 is, really. But I'm saying when you're reading it, say, okay, this is a rule I should know. And if it's 1 or 2. Now, one of the premises here, and I'm going to have to get some power later on, would start with a reliable premise. Now, in security, and I was going to relate it to the research cycle. So a premise can be a hypothesis. So what the slide is going to do, going to hop back later to that, is there are two ways of doing premises. One is inductive versus deductive. In this video now, I just go back to that and then I hop back to this. You cannot sell S. If you cannot sell, that's what Alex Baldwin said. S, you are S. Right? Premise, conclusion. Right? And every argument can be broken down into premise and conclusion. If you cannot sell security, you are insecure. Reverse premise. If you're not secure in yourself, you cannot sell security. All right? So we're going to take a break for 10 minutes now. The video is turning off. And then we're going to start on chapters 1 to 5. All right. I had a teaching learning activity in this, but we do it in 10 minutes while I get a power here. Right. And